This is going to sound so cheesy, but fear makes the world go round. Fear has a significant impact on our everyday decision-making, whether it is pressing the button before crossing the street so you don't end up getting hit by a car, or taking your vitamins every day. Fear is essential to evolution. It is the reason why we're still here. So, what is fear inside the human brain? For starters, we don't decide to feel fear. It just happens. Fear is the result of multiple responses within our brain. There are five major areas in our brain responsible for fear. The thalamus, it decides where to send the incoming sensory data, whether it is something visual, you see, something you hear, something you feel. The sensory cortex is responsible for interpretation of this data that is coming from the thalamus. The hippocampus, which processes the stimuli you're getting, process context for that fear. The amygdala, which is responsible for determining whether the stimuli you're getting is possibly a threat or something else. So is that really a snake in my backyard, or is that just a water pipe? Then finally, the hypothalamus, which triggers the fight or flight response. So yes, that is a snake in my backyard and I should run back inside the house, or hey, that's a snake in my backyard, I'm going to go and kill it. Now, this is a very simple way of explaining how we experience fear. Fear is complex, but it is simple. All the major marketing companies understand this concept. The major religions of the world and the other belief systems are successful because of fear. And finally, the media today is the ultimate source of instigating fear in us. We are constantly fed with content that worries us, whether it's about an illness outbreak or a terrorist attack. When we see these things, we get scared. When we get scared, we end up making irrational decisions based solely off that feeling of fear. Whether that decision is to buy an expensive life insurance policy or to vote for your next political leader of your country, fear works every time. Thank you for listening to Gut Feeling. This is Yusra Khan. I am so excited to share with you this conversation I had with Professor Agi Moller on the topic of fear. Dr. Agi Moller is a professor of cognition and neuroscience at the University of Texas at Dallas. He is also the chairman for the Tinnitus Research Initiative Foundation. Dr. Agi Moller is known internationally for his innovative research on sensory systems and neuroplasticity, and for developing methods for reducing the risk of neurological deficits in the neurosurgical operations. He has a wealth of knowledge and a lot to share. In this conversation, we talked about how irrational fear impacts our health decisions. We also discussed preventive healthcare and the one supplement that is absolutely essential for our health.
You would think that fear is a bad thing because you are not very comfortable with when you are fearful. But actually, fear is a very good thing because it keeps you from doing things that could be harmful to you. If you are fearful when you are driving your car, then you may drive defensive and you have less risk of getting into an accident and so on. And there are many other ways that you can use. You can see that fear is very helpful. But sometimes you wonder if you really, why don't we have enough fear to, take actions to reduce the risk of getting serious diseases? For example, cancer. Everybody talks about cancer is so bad. Now we can cure somehow some forms of cancer, although the cure is somewhat brutal in many cases. But people don't think about how much they could reduce the risk of getting cancer. For example, vitamin D, D3. Is very effective in reducing the risk of cancer. There was a study, scientific study in Germany, and they showed that vitamin D was so very important and could reduce the risk. And then they asked the question, what would you do if you had just one thing you could do to increase people's health? Mm-hmm. The answer was very clear. Give people vitamin D. There is an interesting story about that. We were so happy when we got sunscreen that could prevent us from getting skin cancer or reduce the risk of skin cancer. Skin cancer is pretty easy treatable and really doesn't kill anybody. Maybe melanoma, but that's very rare. But the normal skin cancer is pretty benign in effect. But what it does if you have skin, if you have sunscreen, is that you do not get sun, which is necessary for converting some substances into vitamin D. So we get a vitamin D deficiency if you don't take a vitamin D tablet, of course. And that increased the risk of getting serious cancers, cancers that have very poor treatment, such as pancreas cancer, colon cancer, and breast cancer, and so on. So actually, by using sunscreen, you have traded a perfectly treatable disease, skin cancer, for cancers that are not very easy treatable, and most of them cause instant deaths. So that is what you say. And another thing is, I also wonder why we do not have sufficient amount of fear to prevent some serious birth defects. It has been shown many years ago, actually, maybe 30 years ago, 35 years ago, that if mothers took a vitamin, folic acid, before being pregnant and during pregnancy, then they could almost eliminate a birth defect called spina bifida, which is a crippling disease or defect that that really made life very difficult for the poor child. So you would think that, well, when that was discovered, everybody who were going to go to a gynecologist would be told, take take vitamin B vitamin folic acid, which is actually good for you anyhow. Very good, actually. It's good for your brain. So after all these years, they also the folic acid in bread. It's by law now, but unfortunately, too little of it, and you don't know how much bread people really ate. So this little pill that cost 5 cents or maybe less could have solved that problem. So now, after I think 35 years or so, there was a recent study that asked the question, how many pregnant women have taken this little pill, folic acid?
30%. 30%.
Isn't that remarkable? Wasn't fear of getting a person with a severe motor deficit strong enough to get mothers do this little thing? Obviously not. So now, somewhat later, maybe 15 years ago, it was shown that also autism is affected by that. And there are various studies that show that the risk of autism, of giving birth to a child with autism, can be reduced at least 50% by the same, by folic acid. We don't know now how many people take folic acid for that.
You know something, like people these days, and I think even the internet is kind of piling up these studies that say, like, oh, vitamins don't do anything for you, and, you know?
This is a very popular thing to say, that you should just eat a balanced diet and so on. Honestly, I don't understand what the rationale is in that. Vitamin has, except maybe vitamin A, all other vitamins have no side effects, known side effects. They're very inexpensive, really. And there isn't the, I don't know if it's a medical community, they say that There was a recent study that, of course, came on the first on the front page of the newspapers and in the television news that you don't need to take vitamins.
Yeah,
I just don't understand what that campaign against vitamins is. Because it's some of the most innocent things and also some of the most effective things. Here's a established laboratory where they do serious research and say if you have just one shot in getting people, giving people an improved health, then take vitamin D.
Right.
Isn't that remarkable? Who are these people who tell you that you shouldn't take vitamin D?
Yeah.
I cannot understand that. There is a misunderstanding I can understand to some extent, and that is that there is something called the recommended daily allowance.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very low for all vitamins because it is geared to avoid to be the level where you do not have deficits. You can have vitamin D deficits. It was common in children many years ago. Rachitis gave bone weakness. The bone was not having the calcium they should and so on. And this is probably, you probably only need a few hundred units to do that, to keep that from happening. And we have milk with fortified with vitamin D, so it's no big problem. But that is not what the whole thing is all about. There is a level of optimal. There is one level where you get sick, and then there's one level which is optimal, where you can reduce the risk of many, many diseases. If you can reduce the risk of serious cancers by something like 50%, I don't understand why you shouldn't do it. There's another also, many people are afraid of dementia, of Alzheimer's disease, and it's so bad that there's no treatment, and everybody talk about that they want a test so that you can see when you are 40 years old if you're going to have Alzheimer when you become 80 years old. I really don't understand that. But that is another fear inducer that you can have something that you can be afraid of. But anyhow, the question is that there is no treatment.
Yeah.
So why are you so eager to diagnose it with no treatment that is effective?
Yeah.
But there is a very effective means to reduce the risk of getting dementia.
I see.
It is estimated that if you do that, you can reduce the risk of dementia. Alzheimer's disease is a kind of dementia. It's one
mm-hmm.
dementia. There are many other of them. That you can reduce the risk of getting Alzheimer's disease by 50% by very simple means. It happens to be so that the risk factors for Alzheimer's disease is about the same as the risk factors for cardiovascular diseases.
Okay.
So if you do your exercise, it's on the top of what you should do, physical exercise. If you do not get overweight, for example, obesity is, of course, a big risk factor. For example, people talk about breast cancer in women who are obese is 50% higher
mm-hmm.
than in normal weight women. So it has many other effects also, but it also affects the risk of getting dementia, of
uh-huh.
getting Alzheimer's disease. You can reduce easily,
mm-hmm.
easily reduce the risk by 50%.
Right.
Isn't that worthwhile to talk about that instead of talk about how you possibly can predict whether a person will get Alzheimer's disease
right.
or not?
I feel in the health industry, on this topic, there is a lot of fear that's irrational. So like people are afraid of taking supplements because they feel like it might do too much to their body. So they don't take it because they are believing what the physicians are saying, because the physicians are saying that, you know, the supplements are useless. So with the current system that we have, it's like we don't want people to, you know, have preventive care methods as a part of their life. And then they end up getting sick. And so they're completely fearless until they get sick. And then, you know, now they've come so far where the only option is to get surgery. Yeah. I remember in one of your classes when we talked about chronic neuropathic pain, a lot of times when you go to a doctor, if you have pain, they want to do x-rays and they want to go in and they want to do surgeries or fix them, you know, by actually, like, you know, invasive methods to fix pain. But that's not always the way to, you know, treat pain, right? So there are alternative ways that you can treat pain. So do you think that, you know, are people waiting too long to get help?
You of treating pain. I mean, pain is, of course, a very good warning signal for something going wrong in your body. But if you have ruled that out, then you want to treat the pain, isn't it, right? And chronic neuropathic pain has no, it is not a good message of anything. So that you should really treat the pain. But the problem is that, yes, there are ways of treating pain. We have this opioid crisis right now because people have not understood that chronic pain is not very easy to treat. That chronic pain, that the painkillers such as ibuprofen, such as opioids, are not very effective for treating chronic pain.
Right.
There are other means that you can do with that. But what happens is then that because of poor information, probably, or understanding, people have pain and they go on, and then it becomes chronic pain, and they are used to take one opioid pill a day or two or something like that, and then it doesn't really help anymore. So what do people do if they take two pills a day and it doesn't help? Wouldn't they take three pills a day?
Mm-hmm.
And if three pills doesn't help, wouldn't they take four pills a day? And then you have an addiction coming up, or not only addiction, and you have also what's called tolerance, which means that if you have used one of these painkillers for a while, then actually the effect become less. It's called tolerance. Mm-hmm. And if it is becoming less, what is the natural thing to do? If you have taken one pill a day before, you will take two.
Yeah.
And
right.
If two doesn't help, you will take three, mm-hmm. and four and five. And this is where the problem is, that again, information would have, if you have told people that this is not a good way of doing it, other drugs that are much more effective for long-term, for chronic pain, than just the ordinary painkillers.
Right.
So here comes also that as I said about the folic acid, that information. I don't know that people don't take, women don't take folic acid is, of course, because they don't know that. Nobody have told them that. So mm-hmm. why is that so? And the same with how you administer pain killers. There is so much talk about which painkillers you should do and so on. People talk very little about how to administer that. How many pills are you going to take? How are you going to administer it? That is not told. Right. Maybe a physician will tell it a few, but I mean, what can you remember what he or she said and so on? And that's also another problem.
Yeah. So there seems to be almost like a information and a knowledge communication gap between, yeah. you know, the people
but
and the physician.
That's true. And then you said that I was saying that don't we have enough pain, enough fear
Yeah.
to do that? That's one thing. But of course, also, there are many things people fear that is not rational. And that is, of course, a different side of fear. that we fear all kinds of things that are not going to happen. For example, in this country, we are blessed by not having any problems with terrorism. Terrorism has really not caused very many to be killed or to be harmed in this country, different from other countries. But people are afraid of terrorism here.
Of course,
it is really no risk. But they then the same people will then not take a flu shot, and 20,000 people dies every year in influenza.
Yeah,
and totally unnecessary.
Yeah,
so
people are more afraid of Ebola than influenza.
Yes, that is irrational. But then also they now have flooded the television channels with a message that this vaccine was so bad.
Right.
And everybody said, no, well, it's so bad, then I don't need to take it because it's so bad. Well, it turns out that, yes, some people actually do become sick. But obviously, what statistics now show afterwards, they never die.
Yeah.
If they have taken a flu vaccine, then they never die. I mean, the risk that you would die from influenza if you have taken even the flu shot that is said not to work very well, you don't die from it. You may have to stay home for a few days and so on. So that's the other thing that people are afraid of the wrong thing. We are afraid of terrorism, which is really not a risk here, but then a totally treatable or preventable, I should say, a disease like influenza goes on because people don't take flu shots.
Right.
And then, if you now are really afraid of that, you say that, well, the flu shot maybe not so good and so on. Well, people don't die, usually at least, from the influenza, but they do for pneumonia. That comes after influenza.
Yeah.
And there's a wonderful, very effective pneumonia vaccine that has no real side effects. And actually, it lasts for a long time. You more or less only have to take it once for a lifetime, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
People don't do that. So this is people who are afraid of the wrong things. There are, of course, also people are afraid of things that they are afraid of flying, for example. If you fly on commercial airlines in the United States, then probably the safest place you can be is on an airline flying over the Pacific or the Atlantic.
Yeah.
It's probably safer than in your own home, actually,
yeah,
because you can fall in the bathroom and hit your head and things like that.
Yeah.
But people are afraid of flying, so they would rather drive instead of, because they think
that's
are in control.
Yeah.
Here you have these people who sit behind locked doors and want this airplane, and they don't know what they are doing, really.
Yeah. It's interesting how irrational fear, kind of takes over. I mean, there's millions and billions of people around the world that are more afraid of what happens after they die than what's happening in their life.
Yes.
You know?
That's
and it's
true.
Like, how do you even know what's going to happen, right? So that's also irrational, imaginary
totally
fear.
Irrational. I've been writing about hell, for example. People are afraid of going to hell when they die, after they die. And this is, of course, a totally irrational fear, because nobody have ever seen any signs of hell. And there is no evidence, and actually evidence against it, that when you are dead, you are dead. And that's it. But but people can spend a lot of time fearing these irrational kind of things.
Mm-hmm. And fear also impacts like the kind of decisions that we make in our life.
Yes.
You know, like, for example, like with me, I was very afraid of like initially going into the field of neuroscience, because I was like, oh, I'm not You know, I'm not the best in science. I don't know if neuroscience is a field for me. And it took me some time to finally just be like, you know what? I can do this. I'm going to go in. I might not get an A in all of my classes, but this is something I really want to study. Yeah,
that's true.
And I'm going to overcome that fear, you know? So, and there's that type of fear that people face on a daily basis, which impacts their decisions, because fear is also related to what kind of risk you're going to take and the decisions that you make. Yeah.
Well, fear is, of course, a good protector. I mean, as I said, when you are driving, if you drive defensive because you are afraid of driving next to a big truck or something like that, that's a very good thing also. And there are many other things that are good if you are not married and young woman and don't have sex because you are afraid of getting pregnant. And then you save yourself for some risks, definitely. And because you can also get venereal diseases and things like that.
Right.
So fear is definitely very good, but the problem is so many people waste their time and energy fearing things that really is not worth fearing about. For example, fearing about hell is not worth it because there is no evidence that something like that exists. And if it did exist, it would be somewhat overcrowded, you would think, at these times. So, that is interesting. Then, the question one should ask, of course, fear. You want to fear something. What do you fear about? Well, hell is one thing. Nobody have ever seen any signs that it exists, so that you can discard. But you have afraid of flying, then you would see the statistics and say that really the risk is very small, and then so on and so forth. So if you are rational thinking, then you can also cure your fear. It's not a good idea to cure your fear with Xanax. Xanax is a benzodiazepine that has been used for fear and anxiety and so on. That is definitely not a good idea. You can do it for a short period, but for a longer period, it has very bad side effects.
Right.
This is also one thing that I wonder. People have no hesitation taking this kind of medication, but if you talk about the vitamin D, then don't mention folic acid.
Yeah.
I think
it's because of the, you know, the lab coat effect, right? If a doctor writes your prescription, you know, for Xanax, then you're going to take it. But doctors never write. I mean, I have never had a doctor that tell me in my entire life to take vitamin D.
No,
you know,
that's true.
So if a doctor told me to take something, I know that while women are pregnant, they take multivitamin because, you know, gynecologists will recommend it to them. And then once they're, you know, when the pregnancy is over, they stop taking it because the doctor wrote the prescription for the pregnancy.
Exactly.
You know, and after that, they're done. But, you know, vitamins are known to just help you on a daily basis. I mean, the type of food that we're eating these days, especially in this country, we're eating fast food. I mean, I don't even know. I feel like the food that we're consuming, especially as college students, is more harmful than helpful to our body.
Yes.
You know, so.
So that is absolutely true. But I think, but this is maybe because I'm in the business of education, that education would be a good thing. People will, of course, like to have this invention of a pill or treatment that is magnificent, that will take care of everything. I don't believe that. I think education is really what you know. For example, The strange thing, as I said, is that there's nobody who pay attention to how you administer the medication you get prescribed.
Right.
Maybe a doctor will mention a little bit about it. And people will forget to take the pills and the time and so on. So that is one problem.
Yeah.
So I think that if you want a summary that fear is good.
Fear is good.
Sometimes you think that you have too little of it, but fear is also bad.
Fear is very much like pain. It's a signal, right? It's telling you where something is going to wrong. However, we don't really know the root of the irrational fear.